We're holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, beginning the fifth Perek. Now that we learned in the last Perek about when you sell real estate, what is and isn't included automatically in a place where there's no minig otherwise, because as we've said, Hakol Kaminig Amadina, then now this Perek is going to continue with the same topic as far as metalklin. When you sell a particular metalklin, what is and isn't included there. So the Mishnah starts off, Hamulthar is a sfina. A person sells a ship to somebody else, again, without specifying. Mochar is a toden, then automatically with the ship, he sells the mast, there's a nace and the sail, there's a ugin and the anchor, there's kolam hanhigin oisa, and everything that's used to drive the boat. So the Gemara is going to talk about, it means the oars. There's different other possibilities that Rishonim and Achronim bring up that may be included as well. For example, we learned in Bava Metzia, for example, that there are boats that are moved by pulling them with ropes from along the sides of the river, or even you may have a sphina. Usually is too large for that, but at least like when you're bringing it into port, you might have that it's being pulled with ropes because the water is otherwise too shallow or it's too crowded in the port or whatever. So that might be included. Achronim talk about it might include the compass and things like that, whatever. So all of those things are included because those are all essential to the handling of the boat. However, he has not automatically sold the slaves that the owner of the boat will have had, for example, to row the boat. In those times, it was very common to have slaves that would be the ones who would be manning the oars and rowing the boat. Also to watch the things that the merchandise on the boat and so forth. So those are not automatically sold with it because again, those are not specific to the boat. You use them in other contexts as well. And also not sacks, the large sacks that are used on the boat to hold merchandise. Valerius Antiki, and you also haven't sold automatically with the boat. You haven't sold the Antiki, which means the actual merchandise itself, or there are Rishonim who learn that Antiki can also mean the ballast, as in you have sometimes, you want to have that a ship, you, sometimes a ship needs to ride lower in the water and sometimes higher depending on the weather and other factors. So you have weights that you take along with. Sometimes you'll keep in the boat and sometimes not. So those are, according to that way of looking at it, those would be included in Antiki. The Rashbam adds all these things also. If you makdish the boat, then these things wouldn't be included as well. Unlike in the previous perek, where we said that Bamed Varim Amurim, we had said in the last Mishnah of the previous perek, that the rules of that perek applied only when you're selling, but when you're gifting or being makdish or whatever, that it's different. So here it's not like that. The reason is, Rashbam says, the distinction is, in the previous perek, we were talking about character. So therefore, you can talk about metalklin and things like that that are in the character, which even though they're in it, they're not so bottled. And you could say as far as a sale, they're not so bottled, but as far as hektish, then yes. But here we're talking about things that are purely metalklin. So therefore, it doesn't matter sale or gift or hektish. Either way, it's not going to include the slaves and the rest of the things that the Mishnah just mentioned. Or his mantra amalahiva, homash of a sofa. But again, if you were to tell him, I'm selling you the boat and everything in it, arikol and machorin, then all of those items would indeed be sold because then, by saying everything that's in it, then it would mean that it would include even those kinds of things. Tosfos says that's the reason why did the Mishnah even need to mention at the beginning that you haven't sold the merchandise, if you haven't even sold the sacks, how much more so the merchandise? The chiddush is, though, that in the sefer, when he says, yivachol mashu v'sefer, then yes, the merchandise, the cargo, is also sold as well. Okay. So the Gemara now, we have in the Mishnah, we had several unusual terms that now the first thing is we need to define what they mean. So Torden, the word that when the Mishnah says Torden, that means what we call in Aramaic Iskalia, which is the mast of the ship. You can see in Rashbam, he also uses the word mast for it, so I guess it's the same word in French. B'cheinu Omer, as we have an example in the pasuk where the word Torah is used for that. There's a nevuah from Yechezkel. In Yechezkel's times, you have the city of Tsur was rich and powerful. It was a center of a big trading network. Everybody would come there in ships to trade with them, and they sent their ships all over. So the Novi criticizes them. They were happy when Yerushalayim was destroyed because they figured that now even more business will come to them. Their king Hiram claimed that he was a god, etc. So Yechezkel says several nevuahs about how Tsur is going to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. In one of those nevuahs, he compares Tsur, appropriately enough, to a ship, to a beautiful and well-equipped ship full of merchandise from all over, which then runs into stormy weather and sinks, and being a metaphor, in other words, for how the same way Tsur, you thought you're doing so well, and here you're going to be attacked by the storm by Nebuchadnezzar, and you're going to be destroyed. Anyway, so in his description over there, he says, "V'cheinu Omer, Erez Milavonin Lokohu," he describes they took a cedar tree from Levonin, which is tall and strong, lasas Torah and Aloyich, to make a Torah on you. So therefore we understand the Torah would be something that you make out of a tall tree, namely the mast. Next, Nais, when the Mishnah had mentioned Nais, that means what we call in Aramaic Adra, which is the sail. V'cheinu Omer, in that same Nevuah of his Yahav, he continues, Shesh Merikma Mitzrayim, Hoya Mifrosech, you had embroidered linen from Mitzrayim, as your sail, Lias Lachlan Nais, to be a banner for you. So we see what part of a ship do you make out of linen, and embroidered linen of that would be the sail. His point is, again, Yechezkel's point is not only to compare Tsur to a beautiful ship, but also to say, like, all the nations around you each contributed to your welfare and to your greatness and your beauty and everything, and now it's all going to be gone because of the way you act. Next, the Mishnah had said, Ugin, Tani Rabchia Eva Uginin Shalad. The Ugin of our Mishnah is the anchors. V'cheinu Omer, as we find a pasuk where it uses that word to mean anchored in place, you have when Nomi and her daughters-in-law are coming back from Moab to Eretz Yisrael, and she says to them, what's the point? Why are you coming with me? Your husbands, my sons already passed away. Even if I were to have new sons, well, you're going to sit around and wait for them to grow up. And she says, Alahein to Sabeuna, even if hypothetically I had more sons, would you wait for them Adasha Yudolo until they got older? Alahein Teogena, would you be Teogena, which is what is now is understanding from the same Shurdish as Uginin, would you anchor yourselves in place and stuck? The word Aguna comes from the same Shurdish. Levilti Heyos Leish, that you're not going to get married to a man. So, and then in the end, of course, Orpa leaves and eventually becomes a terrible Rishas, and then the mother of Goliath and his brothers, and Ruth goes with her and becomes the ancestress of David and eventually of Mashiach. Anyway, the point is, we see in the pasuk that Teogena means that to be stuck in place, and therefore that's the Uginin, the anchor of the Ugin of the Mishnah is just that. It's something that makes the ship stuck in place. In other words, an anchor. Mind you, Rashi on the pasuk, actually, on the notes on the side over here, point how goes with the union, point out that Rashi on the pasuk, Davka says it's not from the word Ugin, because he says the form of the word suggests that it actually comes from the Shurdish Og, which means like Og Ugo, like the Choni Amagli made a circle around himself. But here the Gemara is saying that no, it is from that Shurdish. Okay, next, Manhigin. We said in the Mishnah that automatically with the ship Manhigin are sold. So Rav Abba says that means the things that make it move, the oars. V'cheinu Omer, as we find again in Yechezkel's description of the ship as the metaphor for Tsur, Aloinim Miboshin also Mishetayich. They made your Mishetayich, which would be your oars, out of Aloinim trees, a type of strong tree from Boshan. So it's not tall like the cedar tree, but it's nevertheless a strong wood, oak trees or whatever, from Boshan. And therefore that would be the oars. The boy same mehocha, the yod me on his same called Tarif Se Moshe. We also see another pasuk later on in that same parak after he describes how the ship of Tsur is wrecked and destroyed. So the pasuk describes everybody else who's holding oars are going to get off their boats and start mourning for the loss of Tsur. So we see that, and then the point of bringing that second pasuk is we see that the oars are so essential to the ship that we can call the people on a ship the ones who hold the oars. The Rashbam points out actually that unlike the previous proofs that we were bringing from Psukim, where we actually said the word Torah is used to mean a mast, the word nace is used to mean a sail and so forth. Here you don't actually see, the pasuk is not mentioning the word manhigin after all. But the point is that since we see that since Yechezkel mentions them as part of the equipment of the ship, and since we see from the second passage that the main thing of a ship is the oars, so therefore that shows that those are meant to be included with the sail because they're so essential to the functioning of the ship that even though they're not attached, even though they're not physically attached to it, nevertheless they go with it when you sell it. Next, Tana Rabbanan, Hamolcheres Asfina, when a person sells a boat, a Braisa adds more details. Mocheres Iskala, along with the boat, along with the ship, he also automatically sells the Iskala. The Rashbam explains that means the gangplank, the piece of wood that you have nowadays also when you get on and off a boat, you have a plank put down over there that you go, or bridge that you go on to get on and off the boat. So that's automatically included. There are a couple of Rishonim who give other definitions of Iskala. Rabbi Gershom says it means a stove that's on the boat to cook. There are Rishonim who learn that it means a bathroom that's on the boat. Whatever. So that's sold as well. There's Bura Mayim Shabasocha and also the water tank on it. When you're going on a ship in the ocean or in any salt water body, you can't drink the water around you because it's salty. So you need to take along a supply of fresh water. And therefore, again, that's the Braisa is saying that's essential to the functioning of the ship. Therefore, it's sold with it. The Braisa continues, Rav Nosanem HaMochers HaSchina Mochers HaBitzis. When a person sells a big ship, then he also automatically sells with it a bitsis, which is a small boat that goes along with it, sort of like the lifeboats or something. But the Gemara is going to explain in a minute what the bitsis is used for. And Sumcha says similarly, when you sell a ship, you also along with it sell the dugis, which is another name for the small boat. So those two different things. Amar Rava, bitzis hainu dugis. So Rava says these are actually two names for the same thing. So both Rav Nosson and Sumchos are not disagreeing. They're just both giving it the name that was current where they lived. Rav Nosson Bavla, Rav Nosson originally came from Bavel and then came to Eretz Yisrael and he served as Av Beis Din under Rav Shimon Gamliel. So Havakori like Butzis, so he called it Butzis, as we find, for example, there's an area in the south of Bavel called Mishon. We learned all about it in Kedushin. It was a place full of mamzerim, whatever. Anyway, the point is, it was also a very swampy area, so people would have little boats to get around, little flat-bottom boats to get around in there in the water. So similarly now, with a big ship that goes in the ocean or in the Mediterranean Sea or whatever, they would have a bitis along, so that when you want to stop someplace where the water is relatively shallow, you can't bring the big boat all the way to the edge. So therefore you'd have people get off onto these shallow boats and have them come to shore that way. And in Bavel, it was very common in Mishon, for example, which was a swampy area with shallow rivers. They had to do that kind of thing. Therefore, they use the word bitzis for it, which comes in butziyosa, means the swamps. On the other hand, Sumchus, about Eretz Yisrael, Sumchus came from Eretz Yisrael, so he had a different name for it, Korilo Dugis. So in his area, they called it Dugis. Which, in other words, in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have rivers like that, or places like that, such where they need shallow boats like that to get on and off. Instead, though, they use them for fishing. When the crew of the ship wants to go fishing, then they get into a small boat like that, and they go on that. So dugis from the word dung. Kedichtiv, and we find a pasuk We find where the Navi says to the Jewish people, if you don't do tshuva, you're going to end up going in galus, and you and whatever is left of you is going to be taken away in fishing boats. So we see that duga are small boats of shallow draft that are used to go fishing. So bitis and dugis are the same thing, but the difference is what they're being used for, whether you're using them to go into shallow water in order to get on and off the boat, or whether you're using them to go into shallow water in order to go fishing. Alright, well now that the Gemara has gone through all the parts of the ship, and what each one is used for. So now the Gemara is going to digress over the next couple of blocks and talk about. So now the Gemara is going to tell us some agadah first that involves ships. There's an enormous amount of svarim and mefarshim of all kinds that explain the deeper meaning behind all these stories. I have over here. The last time around, when we learned this seven years ago, I put together for myself a little anthology of explanations from different mefarshim. We won't possibly be able to go through all of it, but at least we can get a little bit of a taste. Bechlal, there's a whole discussion, there's a whole concept that's brought in Sforim and various introductions to Agadah and other things that many times the Chachamim have deep ideas that they want to teach us, and they don't just want to say them straight out because people might misunderstand them, misapply them, or whatever, so therefore they hide them and mishal them, and only those who have the keys to the mashal are going to understand them. For everybody else, it seems just like a nice sailor's tale or something. Anyway, so the Gemara starts off. Omer Rabba, Ishtoli Nechusei Yam. Sailors told me the following about ships and about the seas that they go in. Kai Galad Machbal Esfina. A wave that threatens to sink the ship. It appears with a fringe of white fire at the tip of it. So first of all, the point of all these stories, I mean, I just mentioned that they teach us deep concepts in Yiddishkeit, but the Rashbam says that first of all, what you have is, first of all, we see from these stories, Marabu Masecha Hashem, how great are Hashem's works, that, for example, we're going to talk about these gigantic waves and gigantic sea creatures and all kinds of things like that, and we see the greatness of Hashem who made them. Some of them also tell us about the schar of the tzaddikim of the Asid Lavoi, and some of them help us understand Psukim in Sefer Iyov, when Iyov was wondering and was arguing, why is Hashem doing all this to me? So Hashem tells him, do you even understand how the world works? And Hashem mentions to him various gigantic creatures, the Levyosan, the Behavos. So some of the stories that we're going to have over here help illuminate those Psukim. So Omer Rabba, Ishtoli Nechusei Yama, sailors told me, Hai Gala de Makal Esfina, a wave that threatens to sink a ship. It appears like it has a fringe of white fire at its tip. So we strike it with a club, the Chokik Aleh, which the club has engraved on it, the names of Hashem, Ekya Asher Ekya. Kor Hashem Tzvokas, Omen Omen Sela, the Nayach, and then the wave calms down. Now, to some extent, these stories that the Gemara and descriptions that the Gemara is going to tell us, to some extent, they're meant on a pshat level. You have exactly that, a wave that threatens to sink a ship. You see big waves in the sea that have white at their tips. But as far as the deeper meaning of it, all the various mephoshim talk about that it means the wave represents the goyim who threaten us, or it means the from outside, or it means the yitzahara that threatens us from the inside. Maushah talks about that the white fire represents the malach of the nation that tries to attack us. The names of Hashem that we counteract them with are various names, the way Hashem promised that he's always going to be with us and save us from the goyim who harass us in Golos. The Vilna Gaon talks about, he says that a number of these stories like this, you have the psukim in Tilim. You have the psukim in Kapitel Kuf Zayin, Yod HaYom Ba'aniyos, those who go down to the sea in ships. Heimaro Masi Hashem, they see the wonders of Hashem, and then there's a storm, and then they daven, and they're saved from it, and so forth. So he explains that the first few of these stories go according to the order of those psukim. So the first one, Yoda Yamanias, so therefore we're being told a story about people who go down to the sea in ships and are threatened by a wave. And he says the wave represents the ship represents the neshama and the body, the wave represents the Yetzirah. The white fire represents that he pretends to be the good guy, and then we strike him with a club that has all these names of Hashem that shows that Hashem always stands by us and saves us from all those kinds of things, whether we're talking about the nations or the Yetzirah that threaten us. Then there's different other explanations that the white fire represents. There's an interesting one that the white fire represents. He's saying, first of all, the head of it, meaning I'm first. A Yetzirah comes to a person, a head of a Yetzirah. So I'm first, so you should listen to me. And I'm white, like I have white hair. I'm older compared to you, Yetzirah. So again, you should listen to me. Also, well, look, you know, you're anyway separated from Hashem. You're white haired. You've been so long in Golos. And so forth, and we counter him with the names of Hashem, that no, Hashem is always with us, and Hashem is, Hashem expects us to overcome the Yetzirah. So that's the first story. Next, Omer Rabba, Ishtoli Nechuse Yama, the sailors told me, Ben Gala Lagala Tlas Mea Parasi, between one wave and the next, is 300 parasa, which is several hundred miles, the Ruma de Gala Tlas Mea Parasi, and the height of the wave is also 300 parasa. So he continues, Zimna Choda Hava Azlunin Ba'urcha, one time we were traveling on the road, or on the side over here, it says a different gear, so the Sfinta, that we're traveling on a ship. Anyway, the Dalinan Gala, a wave lifted us up so high that Ashbam actually says two possibilities. Either it means that the wave itself lifted them up so high that, as he's going to go on to say, we were close to the stars, or it means that the heat of the stars is detectable from so far away that even though we were still very far away from them, we were still uncomfortably close to the heat of the stars. Anyway, so we were lifted up so high, ad the chazinin de merabata the koich vazuta, until we saw the resting place of the smallest of all the stars, the havali knivza boing grivid bizra the chardala. It appeared to me as an area where you would be able to plant 40 sa of mustard seeds. Mustard seeds are very tiny. So you plant more of them Rashbam says it means not 40 sub, 40 kor. 40 kor of mustard seeds, being that they're much smaller than other seeds, then you plant more of them in a given area. So that was the size, even of the, as we perceived it, of the smallest star, the Idolinum Tfei, and if we were any higher up, Abamachlin and Mehevle, we would have been burnt by the heat of the star. So either, as the Rashbam says, we were lifted up so high that we were actually close to the stars. Now, the Gemara tells us in Chagiga, we're learning it currently in Ein Yaakov, that that even the lowest level of Shemayim is 500 years journey from Earth. So either the Rashbam says it means the wave, which is 300 parasa tall, as we just said, lifted them up and threw them up a much greater height than that, so that they were very close to the stars, or it means, yeah, it only lifted them up to its own height, which is 300 parasa, but even from that distance, they could detect the heat of the star. Anyway, the wave called out to the next wave, my friend, Shavkas Midi Ba'amud L'Shapate, have you left anything over in the world that you haven't flooded and swept away, Denesi Anov Noide, and then I'll come and destroy it? Omalei, and the first wave answers back, and the Rashbam points out that we say between one wave is 300 parasol, which is hundreds of miles, and yet the waves are able to hear one another speak and answer back. So in other words, the point is, the one wave was so high that it thought that I must have, that what else in the world could possibly have survived me? I must have gotten everything, and if not, then I'll get whatever's left from the previous one. Omalei, and the other wave answers back, no. Puk Chazi Gvurta Demorach, go look, come look at the strength of your master of Hashem. You have just a hair's breadth of sand, a string's breadth of sand by the beach. The loy avri, which I can't cross. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Hashem says to the Jewish people, "Ha'osi le'ziro no'om Hashem." Shouldn't you fear me? Says Hashem, "Imi ponai le'sachilu." Shouldn't you tremble in my presence? Asher samti chil gvul la'yom, that I made the sand as a boundary for the sea, choik olam, as an eternal law, v'lo yavrunhu, and they can't cross it. So as big as the waves are, and as much as it looks like each one of them is going to crash on and destroy the whole world, then they can't, because Hashem stops them with that little bit of sand. There's a medrash that says in a similar way that one of the explanations and the mafarshim of this is, again, we're referring to the goyish nations that harass us in Golos, each of which is like a wave, like in the previous story, that threatens to sink us, and each one saying, some of the previous ones before me weren't able to destroy the Jewish people, but I'll be better, I'll do next. And each one of them eventually has to realize, each one of them eventually gets defeated and destroyed and realizes that, no, Hashem controls things, and no, they don't have any more power than the previous one to destroy. Hashem puts a boundary on them and prevents them. So Marshall mentions over here that the waves, represent the various Goyish nations. The 300 parsa in length and in width represents the amount of time, A person goes walk 10 parsa per day. So 300 parsa represents a distance of 30 days, representing that a month. Each month has its own mazel, so therefore each oppressor of the Jewish people has their own mazel. Therefore, that which is why the Gemara uses that that metaphor. Marshall goes on to explain then that what happened was, we know that Esav offered to Yaakov, he said, Nisa the Neelcha, the Eelcha, the Negecha, why don't we travel together? And later on, their descendants, the Romans, say the same thing to the Jewish people, you come along with us and we'll have a joint kingdom together. And therefore, we're saying we were lifted up by that, we would have been in danger of being burnt and destroyed completely if we had that. And he goes on to explain that So this is in the times of the second Beis Mikdash, when the Romans helped out the Hashmonaim, and they had a peace treaty with them for a while, and then they broke it and started dominating the Jewish people. So he goes on to explain the detail of what we're saying over here, 40 kor of mustard seed and a small area and so forth, and explains it all in connection with that here the waves, first they tried to lift us up as if like to make us greater and be with them, and then having since we showed we don't want to do that, then they threatened to destroy us, but Hashem shows that no, he's the one who has the power, and Hashem continues to protect us. Then you have the Vilna Gaon talks about, he says again, given the Psukim in Kapitel Kuf Zayin, the first pasuk was Yodeh Hayom Ba'anias, the ones who go down in the ships to sea. Then you have, all of a sudden there's a storm, but to Roimim Galav, so the story illustrates that pasuk, the waves lift up.
It means a fleck, no?
No, Galav means the wave.
Oh, the Galav.
Yeah. So, and he explains over here that it means that the wave over here refers to the Yetzer Hara. So here you have a person who is, starts going on the right path, which is why the question is, why is it saying they're going on a path and all of a sudden they're lifted up by a wave? It makes better sense if they were on a ship. But he explains that's what it means. We're starting to go on the path. The Yid is trying to start doing tshuva and go on the path of Yiddishkeit. And all of a sudden, then he starts getting lifted up. The Yetzer Hara still, the new tries a different tactic. He lifts him up and starts trying to make him a Baal Gaiva. And he goes and explains the details over there about the size of the star and the mustard and all that represents that this person thinks of himself as much greater than he really is. And then so the wave says, well, look, you know, is there anything left of the person that you haven't destroyed yet that the next wave of the Yetzer Hara will come and get? And we say, no, look at the tzaddikim. They have the ability to overcome the Yetzer Hara. A Yid has to realize that he has that ability within himself as well, represented by the sand, and overcome that Yetzer Hara and not allow himself to become a Baal Gaiva. Then again, there are different, many other explanations about what's going on over here. One very interesting one that I saw is when we're talking about over here, the 300. So here, Marashah said that 300 pyrus represents a distance of that you can walk in 1 month. There is another point that somebody makes that, we see in Jewish history, there's been a lot of troubles we've had with the Shibud Malchus and all throughout history, but it's really been mainly every 300 years that there's been a real tremendous catastrophe that was much greater than the other ones. You have, for example, the Churban and all the aftermath of that, and then you have 300 years later, you had that terrible persecutions in Bavel that caused the end of the period of the Gemara. And 300 years later, after that, you have the beginning of the Karoyim, which destroyed a large percentage of the Jewish people. And 300 years. The Karoyim were the people who believed only in Torah Shabbat Sabbath, the whole movement that began over there. And 300 years after that, you have the Crusades. No, they didn't physically fight, but the point is, Baruch Yis had destroyed part of the Jewish people. I'm talking about Sadia Goin and other great Goyim who fought against them and then weakened them. But anyway, then you have after that, 300 years later, is the Crusades, and he goes, after that, so you have like the Eibush gives us like a respite. You have, it's not easy in between, but you have really only those tremendous catastrophes are about 300 years apart. Well, so the last one was the Holocaust, so. Omar Rabba, Lididi Chozi Li Hurman Bar Livis. So Rabba says the next story is, I personally saw Hurman Bar Livis. The Rashbam brings two possibilities. Is the Gerus supposed to be Hurmin or Hurmiz? Based on other Gemaras, Hurmiz is the name of a shed. So therefore, so we're talking about over here a shed, and really, if you have the Gersa Hurmin, then also it can mean a character like that. Gemara elsewhere mentions that the Persians in those times believed in two gods. One, and again, there's different Gersais, what the names are exactly. Hurmiz and Ahurmiz, or Hurmiz and Hurmin, or whatever. So this represents one of the something like that. By Lilis is the famous queen of the famous mother of the Shadim. You have Samach Mem and Lilis that are so to speak husband and wife. Anyway, This Hurmin by Lilis was running along the battlements of the walls of Mechuzah. You have a wall has, if you look at the wall of the old city of Yerushalayim, it has those little things that go up and down, those little projections that go up and down on top of the wall. That's what's called Kufya over here. So he's running along those battlements of the wall. The Rohit Parsha, Ki Rohit Cheb Semitatori. Meanwhile, at the same time, a horseman riding on an animal underneath on the ground alongside the wall is running along the lo yochilei and he can't catch up to him. So there's different explanations. Actually, the Rashbam says on the pshat level it means the horseman couldn't catch up to the shed because the shed was running faster. The Rashbam also adds it doesn't mean the horseman didn't know that the shed was there. He's just running along on his horse. But Rabba is saying that he was able to see that the shed is running faster than the horseman. The Rashbam also adds the point of this story. Now, again, each of these stories that Rashbam is saying, Pashut has a point. Before we get into all the Jeroshis and Ramazim and everything, they have a more straightforward meaning of what they're teaching us. So, again, the first couple of stories tell us about the greatness of Hashem, that he controls the waves and saves people in danger and so forth. So now this one teaches us that Hashem has rachmanus on his creatures and doesn't allow the shadim, as powerful as they are, and we're saying that they can outrun a man on a horse, that Hashem doesn't allow them to harm people. It also teaches us, though, that what the Gemara mentions in various places, you shouldn't go outside alone, especially at night, precisely because that's when shadim roam around and you're more vulnerable to them. And you see from this story how powerful shadim are. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Zimnechoda had a mesogen like Tauti Kudnaisi. One time, this Hurmin by Lilis had two mules saddled up for him. The two mules were standing on the two bridges of across the river Roignag. That was the name of the river. And this Hurmin bar Livis is jumping back and forth from one mule to the other, across back and forth, across the river, across from one bridge to another. The Nokit Tre Mazgid Chamrib Yidei, he had in his hands two two cups full of wine, umurik mehai lahai, mehai lahai, and he's pouring from one as he's dancing over there back and forth. He's pouring from one to the other and the other to the other, v'lein natz v'ni toif to la'ara, and not a single drop fell on the ground. Even though it was a day when it was very, very stormy, everything is going up, everything is going down. So it was a very stormy day. You would think, and under such circumstances, how could he be jumping around over there back and forth and not lose his balance, let alone not spill any of the wine? And yet he was able to. Ad shamu be'malchusa, until they heard about this in the palace, v'katluhu, and they killed him. Which palace are we talking about? So the Rashbam says two possibilities. First of all, it can mean the palace, can mean the king of the Shadim. Shadim are not supposed to show off their strength in front of people. And this guy is doing that. He's standing over there with his mules and then jumping back and forth and pouring his wine back and forth. So therefore he's showing off an inappropriate display like that, that the king of the Shadim did not like because revealing those secrets. Then the Rashbam says another possibility. The king over here is the human king. He's afraid. The Rashbam points out this Hermann bar Lilis was actually a hybrid. He was actually born from, we said that he's bar Lilis. His mother is Lilis, which is a female shed, implying that his father was not. His father was a human being who had had relations with the Shida, and this child was born. So therefore he's like half person, half shed, which is why he was vulnerable to being executed by the king. And therefore the king is afraid a guy with such power, with such supernatural power, seeming supernatural power, might even overthrow me and take over the kingship for himself. And therefore he had him executed. How do you catch a guy? Whatever, somehow. Yeah. Okay. What's the meanings behind it? So Marsha talks about that this Hermann bar Lilis is an agent of the Yetzer Hara, and he's running along the wall because the Yetzer Hara tries to attack the Jewish people more. The Gemara mentions in Sukkah that the Yetzer Hara ignores all the other nations because big deal, he gets them to do wrong. What does he accomplish? The Jewish people. And he's running along the battlements over there, along the teeth on the wall over there, which is the weakest part of the wall, meaning that the Yetzer Hara is trying to attack the Torah and the Jewish people in the weakest area, whether it means to attack the Chukim, which seems to be the weakest for us to understand, or the weaker Jews. Meanwhile, you have the horsemen running along, or the tzaddikim, who are running to do mitzvahs, but they prevent him from being able to accomplish. So actually, Marsha explains, now that Rashbam had said, the lo yochilei means that the horsemen can't keep up with Hermann. Marsha says it the other way around. It means that Hermann can't keep up with the tzaddikim who are fighting against him. So he goes to the mules representing the goyim, and you have in Sefer Daniel it talks about how there's always going to be two superpowers fighting one against the other, but they're like mules, they're sterile, nothing ever comes out of them, in the longer term. And so eventually those nations are going to be punished by Hashem, which is described throughout Tanakh as they're going to drink a cup of punishment. And therefore that's it. And eventually the Yetzer Hara himself gets executed, L'Mosa Mashiach. That's Marsha.
What's with the two cups of wine?
The two cups of wine, he says, represents the cups of punishment that those nations, that those goyim, that the Yetzer Hara is trying to incite against us, are going to eventually have to drink. Throughout Tanakh, you have Tilim, you have Yirmiyah, and a number of places where it describes the punishment Hashem is going to give the goyim as being like having to drink a cup of bitter wine. So that's represented over here. And not one drop spilled, in other words, not one thing that Hashem said is going to happen to them is going to fail to happen. That's Marsha. Then the Vilna Gaon talks about, again, he says here we see clearly in the Gemara itself, quotes the Pasuk in Kapitel Kuf Zayin, Yahweh Shemayim Yehudu Sahoimus. So therefore he says that's why this story is next, because again, it's going in order of the Pesukim. And he explains also that the Hermann bar Lilis over here represents the Yetzer Hara. So you have a person who is learning Torah, but he's learning it lekanter, he's learning it to make himself a Baal Gaiva, and therefore that's represented by him running along the wall over there, and the rider on the horse again represents Tzadik, and here the Vilna Gaon says, like the Rashbam, he can't keep up with him, because even the actual genuine Talmud Chacham, as much as he's working on Avodas Hashem, he still has the Yetzer Hara opposing him. Mashenkin, this guy, has the Yetzer Hara on his side, because he's learning Shalom Shema. So therefore, Hurman is able to outrace the other guy. Meanwhile, then he has his mules and his wine representing his typhus that he's into. And eventually, so here he's living his whole life in bed of typhus. And eventually, there comes a time when Shlomo Malka, the king, the Eibishter, decides it's time for him to go. He's not accomplishing anything useful for the world. And again, there are different other explanations. There's actually one from Pella Yoyitz, who says that actually here you're talking about that, so Hurim is himself is again a person who's learning Torah, Shalei Lishma, and then you have underneath is somebody who's learning he's underneath in the sense that he's an onav, he's learning Torah in the right way. I believe, but again, eventually now the horseman himself becomes the king. This is how the Pella Yoyitz learns it, and he's now able to kill that clip over there and take that Torah that the guy learned, the wall that he was running along, and recapture it and bring it back to Kedusha. Okay. Next, Omer Rabba, the Didi Chozili Uzila Bar Yoyitz. Rabba says, and in each of these things, by the way, it just says Rabba in front of us over here, but there are stories that say Rabba Baba Chana, which is why we know them famously as the stories of Rabba Baba Chana. Anyway, so Omer Rabba, l'di chozi le'uzila bar yoyne, I personally saw a young uzila. So Rashbam says that means a newborn re'e. The Re'eim is a giant animal mentioned in various places in Tanakh, has tall horns. So he was just born that day. Tosfos discusses over here the possibility based on a Gemara in Zvachim that maybe the Uzila is actually a big fish, but Tosfos says that's not what it means. It means, like Rashbam says, a newborn Re'eim, a land animal. David HaMelech one time was picked up by it, where it was on its horn, he was very afraid that he might be knocked down, so he promised to build the Beis Mikdash. It was the one that was tied to the outside of the Teva because it wouldn't fit inside. They had to take Re'eim along, otherwise they would have extinct in the marble. As Gemara mentions in Zvachim, it was too big to fit in the Teva. They had to tie it to the outside of the Teva, and its snout, its nose, was inside the Teva, so it would be able to breathe. Because otherwise, all the air outside was going to...
There was a hole there for his nose.
I
guess a miracle happened.
On top, and their aim on the side. Yeah, it was fun there. Yeah. So I saw a newborn Uzila to have a Kahar Tover, which was the size of Har Tover. By Har Tover Kamahavi, what is the size of Har Tover? Arba Parsi. It's 4 Parsi in size, which is around 4 Parsi would be around 10 miles. There's a different Girsa, which Marsha and a number of other Mephoshim have, that's supposed to be Arba'im Parsi, 40 Parsi, which would be 10 times that. Umashochad Tzavore, this creature that I saw, he says, the length of its neck, Slosa Parsi, was 3 Parsa. Obey my Bata Duresha, the area that it would lay its head down when it wants to lay its head down to rest, the area that its head would take up, is Parsa Upalga, is 1.5 Parsa. So again, the Rashbam had said before, some of these stories are meant to illustrate the great creatures that Hashem has created in the world for us to realize the power of Hashem and how Hashem runs things in the world. So we're describing this gigantic creature which takes up all that space. And he continues, Roma Kufsa, this animal then at one point defecated, it produced waste, the Sochal El Yardina, and blocked up the Yardin with its waste because it was so gigantic. Obviously, the Yaudin still flows now, that Rashbam points out. Okay, well, you know, over time, it would be gradually dissolved by the water. So, the Ritva starts by...
Imagine what it eats.
You can imagine what it eats. So actually, so you have the, so you have a Pasuk in Tehillim that mentions Behemoth Baharei Olef, and there's a Medrash that explains that it means that this Behemoth, which is maybe the same animal that we're describing over here, every day it needs to eat the grass on 1,000 mountains, and that's its food for the day. Later on, the Gemara is going to discuss the behemoth in more detail, but whether this is the same one, I don't know. Anyway, okay, so to start with, the Ritva explains that actually this day-old creature, he says, refers to the religions that came out of Yiddishkeit, Christianity and Islam, and in one day, like the Ritva says this. Islam came from Yiddishkeit also. Muhammad, Yimach Shemai, heard different stories of Yiddishkeit and blended them together to create parts of his religion, yeah. He got some things tremendously wrong. For example, he mixed up Haman and Bilam and Pare and Achashverosh. So he has Haman advising Pare to destroy the Jewish people. Whatever, anyway, but yeah. So the Ritzvah explains them. So you have these nations, you have these religions that all of a sudden, in a very short amount of time, grew to tremendous heights, as the Gemara is describing this gigantic animal on the day it was born. And now, what do they do? So what do they do? They take our pure Yiddishkeit, like the water of the Yarden, and they dirty it up with their filth. Then the Marashah says that actually, on the other hand, Marashah says that no, this day-old creature refers to Yeshua. He's compared to a Re'em, the county Re'em county. And it means that he, right away at the beginning of his career, is defeating 31 kings in Eretz Yisrael. He made the sun stand still, which he explains is represented by the size of Har Tavor. He explains how the 40 parasa of Har Tavor represent the amount of time that the sun stood still. And he explains the other details over there, how they relate to Yerushalayim and to the size of the camp of the Jewish people, and that he dammed up the Yarden, as in he caused the Yarden to split when he first came into Eretz Yisrael. Then the Vilna Gaon says that this creature represents a newly minted Talmid Chacham. He thinks that he's already much greater than he really is. He goes on to explain the details over here. He thinks that all in one day he's accomplished what a person would take many years to accomplish. He thinks he has horns already to be able to start shteching in Torah and so on and so forth. He imagines that he's reaching the clouds with his head, representing that his neck is 3 parasa tall, etc. And then finally, what happens? Such a person, he realizes he's not getting anywhere. Everybody realizes him for the beginner that he is. So he just tries to besmirch and foul up the genuine Talmid Chachamim. But eventually, like the Rashbam says, the water just melts away what he puts over there. So then different other explanations. There's one from Rav Kook that says that a Re'em, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, it has horns that are very beautiful, but they're not very strong. So therefore, this creature that was born on one day, he'll learn Torah whenever he feels like it, and he just looks out for what's good. He doesn't participate in Torah the way he's supposed to. The 4 parashah represents that he thinks that a person is supposed to learn with a Seder. First you work on Pshat, later on you graduate to Drush and so forth. He just jumps into all of them at once, thinking that he has all those abilities and so forth. And eventually people recognize him for what he is, similar to what the Vilna Gaon says, that he's not everything that he cracks himself up to be.
Rabbi
says, Rabbi Baba Chana says, I saw a frog. This frog was the size of the town of Hagrun. How large is that town? Shikin Bati. There are 60 houses in that city. Also, Tanina, a snake came, Bola, and swallowed up that frog. Also, Pushkansa, then a raven came, or Bola the Tanina, a female raven, and Bola the Tanina, and swallowed that snake, or fish, or whatever. The Solik Yosef Ilana, and the raven went and perched in a tree. Tochazi Kamanafish Chela de Ilana. Imagine how strong that tree is that could hold a raven that was able to swallow a snake, that was able to swallow a frog that's the size of 60 houses. So again, based on what the Rashbam said before, one thing is it makes us realize the greatness of Hashem who created such things. Anyway, Omer HaPapa Shmuel, Eloi HaGoi Hosem, so HaPapa Shmuel says, if I hadn't been there, Loi Heimni, then I wouldn't believe that such a thing is possible. There is, by the way, an interesting point elsewhere. The Gemara mentions, you know, we're going to have actually later in the Sugya, we're going to have where Rav Gamliel teaches something about Limos Mashiach. Big things that are going to be there, big jewels that are going to be used to carve out dates for Yerushalayim. And the Gemara mentions over there that one of the Talmidim was mocking it and saying, how is it possible? And then Amiel criticized him for it. So how is the Papa Bar Shmuel saying over here, if I hadn't been there, I wouldn't believe it, doesn't amount to the same thing. So they have the comments in one place in a letter that, no, first of all, he's not making fun. He's just saying, I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't seen it. At least I wouldn't believe it's true on a simple level. And also, he's not saying in public like this Talmud did to the Gamliel. He's saying in private, when the Chachamim are discussing this in the Mismedrash, he mentions this. And besides that, anyway, you have so many of the Mephoshim say that these things are meant as Mashalim, so they're unlike what Rambam Gamliel was saying about the jewels, the Moshe Mashiach, which is a poshut pshat thing that's actually going to be that way. So therefore, it's not Malaglug, I'll do Rechacham. Anyway, what's going on over here? And the Ritzvah explains, and Marsha goes into more detail, that the frog represents the Greeks who ruled over the whole known world, representing by 60 houses. Then the snake, which is the Romans, conquered them. Then the raven, which is the Arabs, conquered them. It's called a female raven, Davka, because his tumah comes from the fact that his mother was Hagar. And he goes and perches in the tree, because in other words, ultimately what keeps the Shme'elim going is the schus of Avram. That Hashem promised Avram that Yishmael is going to become a great nation. So imagine the strength of the tree. Imagine the strength of Avraham who planted a tree by Yitta Eshel, that strength gives so much power even to the Yishmaelim, to the Arabs nowadays. Yeah. Then the Vilna Gaon says that the frog represents a Talmud Chacham. Zoya has an expression that why would the Mitzrayim punish with Makas Tzfardeya? One thing is, because just like a frog constantly croaks by day and by night, the same way Talmud Chacham Bar Yisra Yom Valayla. And the Mitzrayim were preventing the Jewish people from learning Torah in Mitzrayim, therefore they were punished with frogs. So now what happens is, And this frog is gigantic. He knows all the 60 Masechtos. He has Yiras Shemaim as well. But then the Yetzer Hara comes and attacks him and tries to get him to give up learning because you're not managing to make ends meet. Then comes a raven representing a Zvulun who goes, oh no, the raven is that the Talmud Chacham says to himself, you know what, I'm not going to worry about that. A raven doesn't concern itself with its children. The Vnei Oyev and Ashevi Crow, he relies on Hashem to provide for his children. I'm going to rely on Hashem. I'm not going to listen to the Yetzer Hara. Then the Eved gives him a tree, which is a supporter, like a Zvulun to his Yisachar, who will support him so he can tack and be able to continue to provide for his family. And Rapapa Bar Shmuel says, you know, in Bavel, they're not always so generous in supporting some of the Chachamim. If I hadn't been there in Eretz Yisrael to see that there were actually Zvulons over there who do that, I wouldn't have believed, because where I come from in Bavel, you don't find such people. In Eretz Yisrael, you find, that's what Rapapa Bar Shmuel was saying, in Eretz Yisrael, you will find a tree, but in Bavel, not so much. Yeah. Then you have different other ones, one of them is the frog represents the Jewish people in general. The 60 houses represent 600,000 Jews. The snake is the Nachash HaKadmoni, and the raven is not that it counteracts the snake, but it's even worse. It's even worse. A raven is a black bird, so it represents the darkness of Golus. And what saves us is the Torah, the Eitz Chaim Hilamachzikimba, which is the tree. Yeah. So imagine the power of the Torah, that it has the ability to help us against all those other things. Next.
Is this also in Inyakov?
Yeah, there's all of this is in Inyakov as well, yeah. Next. Ba'omer Rabbi Bachana, Zimna Choda have a Kazlin in the Sfida. One time we were traveling on a ship, Bechazin and Ahu Kavra, we saw a fish, the Yasvele Achlatina Ba'usye. An Achlatina, which literally means a mud eater, it means a small sheret, got lodged in its nose, in its nostrils. Kavra means a fish. It's an Aramaic word for fish, yeah. The Rashbam points out that you have, for example, the Gemara mentions in Shabbos, that even the Leviathan is afraid of a little tiny fish called a kilvis, which can get stuck in the Leviathan's nose or something and kill it, like in our story over here. So he was saying the same thing. You had a gigantic fish, a little ochlatina, a little muddy ear fish got stuck in its nose and caused it to die. Yeah, whatever it is. The water push the dead fish out of the water, because the water, dead things don't stay in the water. They get thrown out onto dry land. The Shadyul Gurda, so it was thrown onto the beach, and it was so big, the Choruv Mene Shitin Mechuzi, 60 cities were destroyed by that fish landing on them. No, we're talking about that it was dead. So the water, like, threw it out onto the dry land, and it fell on top of 60 cities and then wrecked them.
Must have been way the day then, because
whatever. We're saying that it's a gigantic fish and it got passed out onto the land, yeah. But Ochum and Eshitin Mechuzi, 60 cities were able to eat from the flesh of that fish. Umochum and Eshitin Mechuzi, 60 cities were able to salt some of the flesh of the fish to eat for later. They took from one eyeball of the fish, they were able to fill up 300 barrels of oil. The fish was so gigantic that even its eye had in it so much oil. Then he continues, if he had them, the boss of Tracy Yacheshata, when I returned to that area 12 months later, Chazina, and the Rabbi Baba Chana says, I saw that I would convince you in the Garmi Talalta, they were sawing out of the bones of this dead fish, they were sawing beams to make sukkahs, to make temporary dwellings, the Yasu, the Mivninu, the Hanach Machuzi, and they're using those bones to rebuild their cities. it sounds funny, but again, on a shock level that Ashban says, again, if you realize such a gigantic fish, imagine how much more greater and gigantic is the Eibishter who created that fish. So Marsha says, So Marsha says that the fish represents Haman in the story of Purim, and the little creature that got lodged in his nose is Mordechai. Haman thought he did nothing, but Yivas Be'enav, the cities that are destroyed are our enemies that were destroyed in the aftermath of that whole story, all the 75,000 and the et cetera anti-Semites that were killed all over the Persian Empire, and we ate from it, and we even were allowed to take the spoils that's represented by the eating. In the end, we didn't. But the Achashverosh had allowed it. And he explains more deeply. We got tremendous simcha from it, and then we're rebuilding out of his bones. We're celebrating because what he tried to destroy, we're celebrating and we're rebuilding year after year. Then the Kliyoka wrote a sefer of Jeroshis called Olalis Ephraim. He explains that here the fish represents a tzaddik. He says the mud eater in his nose that kills him represents, sometimes you have a tzaddik, like a small mistake, like Moshe Rabbeinu by Mei Meriva, that causes him to pass away. Different people have different reactions when a tzaddik passes away. Could you just say, you know what, then forget about it, we're destroyed. There's no reason to even bother go on living. Then you have others and say, you know what, we'll eat and drink and who cares, you know, and then you have the third group, the ones who sorted away, realize we have to stick to the Torah, which is compared to bris milk. Eventually you have here, there comes Trias Amesim, and then the bone and the whole body is rebuilt from bones like we have over here, where they rebuilt these cities out of the bones. Different explanations of what does what Rabbi Baba Chana means to represent with this story. But Omer Rabbi Baba Chana, Zimna Chada Havakaz, Zimna Sfinta, one time we were traveling on a ship, the Chazin and Ahu Kavra, the Yasvelech Chalta Agabe, we saw there was a fish that had sand on its back. The Kodach Agma Ilave, and there were grasses and weeds and seaweed or whatever growing on top of it. Savrin and Yabeshti. So we thought it's dry land. The Salkinan, so we went up onto this supposed dry land, this island, there's a Vafinan or Vashlin and Agabe, and we started baking and cooking on top of it. The Kadcham Gabe, but then when the back got hot, is Hapich, then the fish turned over. And we realized it's not an island anymore. We were on top of a big fish. But he loved the have in the car of a sphincter. If the ship hadn't been nearby, have a tavinon, we would have drank. So what's going on over here? So the Ritzvah explains basically that it means that here we have, you know, we have times when we have a respite in Golus. We find like we think we have an island, we have a safe place, but we got to realize things can turn over very quickly. So you always got to have the ship of Torah nearby. Marsha says specifically it continues from the previous story talking about Haman and Adar, that here we thought that we can go join Ahasuerus' party and all of a sudden things turn over and we realize we're in trouble, but we right away did tshuva and otherwise chas v'shalom. Different other explanations like that, along the lines of that basically that we realize not everything is as it seems, and you always gotta have your safe haven of Torah and mitzvahs with you. But Omer Rabbi Bachana, Zimna Choda Haba Azlinin Besfinta, we were traveling on a ship, the Sagoi Sfinta Ben Shitza Lashitza to Kavra Tlosa Yomi or Tlosa Lelavasa. The ship was traveling between one fin of the fish and the other for 3 days and 3 nights. In other words, again, it was such a gigantic fish that it took 3 days for the ship to be able to travel just between one fin of the fish and the other. So again, we see what tremendous creatures the Eidoshter has created in his world. Not only that, the fish was swimming against the current and we were going with the current. So we were going in opposite directions and yet it took us so long. And we're going downstream, which should be easier and faster to go. You're going to say, okay, so it was a slow ship. What does that prove? No, he also Rav Dimi Yomer. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, in the amount of time that it would take to boil up a kettle of water, Masagya shit in parasi. That ship was able to travel 60 parasa, which is like 200 miles, just in the time, just in the few minutes that it takes to boil up a kettle of water. So no, the ship was going extremely fast, and yet it took 3 days for it to pass from one fin of this gigantic fish to the other.
No motor then, so
yeah, so but still it was going very fast. The study parasha gira, in fact, Rav Dimi continues, a horseman on land could shoot an arrow, the cod malay, and the ship would go faster than the arrow. So even though it was going so fast, it still took days to traverse the whole fish.
And the fish was going opposite.
And the fish was going in the opposite direction and upstream, yeah. So Rav Ashi says, you should know, that fish is a gildona, which is a type of small fish from the sea, where such fish have two fins. In other words, you shouldn't think, Rav Ashi says, this is the biggest fish in the sea. This is actually one of the smaller fish, and still so gigantic as we're describing. The Maharal, by the way, points out that it's a chesed of Hashem in the simple sense. The smaller fish, Hashem gives them more fins so that they can more easily swim against the current. The large fish don't need that as much. Therefore, Rav Ashi is pointing out, one angle that Rav Ashi is pointing out is the chesed of Hashem, that he creates each creature with exactly what it needs. Anyway, so the Ritzva says, first of all, we learn from that not always the strongest or the fastest win out. You would think that the boat is going so fast, for sure it must go faster than anything else. But no, even so, the fish is able to overpower that. So Hashem is the one who decides who's going to win the race, and it represents also the time the between the fins represents between one king and another in Golos, when you have periods of troubles and shmad and all, and the current is swift. The fact is, we don't even sometimes even the tzaddikim end up. You have the Asorah of Malchus and other examples that's represented by That's represented by the current is swift, and we can't always counteract that. Sometimes we're stuck in there, and sometimes even the tzaddikim are taken away in these gzeiros, says the Ritva. Marsha says that this is another one about Haman and the story of Purim. There were 3 days when they're fasting over there. That's representing the 3 days over here, and the two fins represents it was like in the balance, who's going to be destroyed, the Amalekim or Chas v'Shalom Yid. So for three days it was in the balance, but in the end, he went up and we went down, meaning that he went up and got hung on the tall gallows, and we went down, we were saved from that kind of thing. And then different other ones, there are people who explain that the fish represent, that these things represent different things that happened during the second Beis Hamikdash. The fish would represent the Greeks, and the ships sailing fast is the Chachamim who are working to counteract what they and the Messiavnim are doing, or that the fish represents Yanei HaMelech, and then the fish represents Shimon ben Shlatach and the other Chachamim who successfully fought against him and kept the Yiddishkeit going. V'omer Rabba Babachana, Zimna Chod Hava Azlimum Sfinta, one time we were traveling on a ship, V'chazinin Ahut Sipra V'koyim Ad Katsula V'maya. We saw a bird that was standing up to its ankles in water, V'reisha V'rakia, and its head was in the sky. V'aminin, so we thought, like a Maya, there can't be much water over here. How deep could it be if it's only up to its ankles? So we wanted to go down into that water to cool ourselves off. The north of Baskola, but then a Baskol came out. Don't come down over here into the water. The Nafla, you want to know how strong the current is. The Nafla, the Chatzitza, the Baunagra, Hashem Shli, a carpenter dropped an axe into this water 7 years ago, the Loikamatia Ara, and even now, 7 years later, the axe hasn't reached the bottom. The Ladmashim, the Nefishi Maya, it's not because the water is so deep, Elamashim, the Radzi Maya, but because the current is so strong that it prevented it, tossing it back and forth and preventing it from sinking. Omer Ravashi, Yahu Ziz Sodehu. You should know what was that bird. Ravashi says is the bird called Ziz Sodeh, Ziz Sodeh Imadi, as you have a pasuk in Tillim where Hashem says the Ziz Sodeh is with me, so therefore it's with me, so to speak, and that it's in that its head is in Shammai. Okay. So the Zohar, here you have a rare thing where the Zohar explains one of these stories, and he explains that you have the sea over here that the bird is standing in is the sea of Torah, and we know we have the story in Chagigah about Balbosh and Nichnasul of Paradis, where three out of the four of them didn't make it out successfully. Only Rabbi Akiva did, so that's representing the bird itself, represents the tzaddik. Because like he connects heaven and earth, but we're saying that even so, with this level of learning Torah, like they did to the paradise, you have to be very careful because you see, for example, like three out of the four Chachamim weren't able to make. Marshall explains that the water on earth represents Nigla, the head in the clouds represents the Torah Sakabola, Torah Sanister, and a person wants to delve into it, but he's being told you still need a teacher because otherwise you have even a Talmud Chacham has a question that for years he hasn't been able to resolve. It's very difficult to get to the bottom of the matter. In fact, Marshall says particularly you have what happened with Yeshua before Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. The Gemara tells us in Temura, in Masechta Temura, that Moshe says to Yeshua, this is your last opportunity. Ask me anything you need to know. And Yeshua says, Moshe, I've been learning about you for decades. I know everything there is to know. And what happened? Eventually, Yeshua forgot hundreds of halachos. So therefore, that's represented over here by the axe that was dropped in the current. And even years later, you're not able to get to the bottom of it. So don't think that you know everything there is to know in Torah, in short. And then there's other ones. You have the bird represents an apikoidus who thinks of himself as he thinks he's very smart. His head is in the sky. Meanwhile, he doesn't have very much knowledge of Torah. So we think there's not much water over there. It should be easy to show him where he's mistaken. But no, don't get involved with him. You know, Talmud Chacham tried already and still wasn't able to accomplish, even after 7 years, wasn't able to talk the guy out of his thing because the guy he'll do anything, he'll change the subject or whatever, like a rapid current where you're not going to get very far with such a person. One time we were traveling in the desert. We saw these geese that their feathers were falling out because they were so fat. And there were rivers of oil, of fat, flowing from underneath them. Aminalahu, so Rabbi Abachana says, I asked the geese, Islam the Gavaifu Chokal Amud Asi, are we Jews going to have a portion of you in Olam Haba? So in answer, Dolly Gadfa, one of them picked up its wing to show, as if to show, you'll have the wing as your portion. And Dolly Atma, and the other one lifted up his thigh to show the same thing. And Rabbi Babachana says, when I came back and I told Rabbi Lozer what I had seen, the Jewish people in the future are going to have to give an account for the tzar balachayim that these creatures are suffering with. They're getting fatter and fatter and barely able to move, and their feathers falling out and all. And why are the Jewish people not bringing Mashiach already? And then they would already be able to be used as the reward for the tzaddik. So the Ritva explains again, similar to we explained before, that some of these stories talk about the various Goyish powers, the various Goyish religions. So he says that that's what it means. The geese over here represent them, the Christians and the Muslims. Eventually, they're like geese, which make loud honking noises. Eventually, when Mashiach comes, they're going to be calling in Hashem's name. But and there's not going to be many of them left at that point. That's represented by the feathers falling out. But still, we were saying that it should have been already. It should have already been literally called them B'Shem Hashem, that they were calling in Hashem's name. We Jewish people are going to be held to account. Why are we causing the Golus to go on so long that these Goyish religions still have power and they don't yet recognize the greatness of Eibishter? Then Marashah says, B'chlal, in Sefer Yechezkel, it describes there's going to come a point in the last stages of Golus where it says that the Eibishter is going to bring us to Midbar Ha'amim, to a Midbar, and there the Jewish people are going to go through their final refinement of who deserves to be for Yemosi Mashiach and who's not. So that's the desert over here, and then we're going to have over here, like the Slav in the desert, we're going to have fat geese with rivers of oil, ruchniesticker, and mental, intellectual and ruchniesticker pleasure. But the geese are telling him, you know, you also need to do mitzvahs maisius with your hands representing the wings and with walking with your feet. And we're saying then you have people who enjoyed these things but didn't bother earning them with their mitzvahs. So Asid and Litton and Alanis Hadin, they're going to have to give account for why are they enjoying those things without putting in the effort and Torah and mitzvahs that they're supposed to. Here you have a rare one where you have an Hasidus, you have something about it. The Alter Rebbe brings something about it in Likutei Torah. The geese over here, he says, represent Chochmei Law. You have to bring it down even into the desert of this world. And the fat also represents Chochmah, but it also represents the bittul that a yid is supposed to have with the Chochmah of Torah. And he says, the feathers falling out represents, nowadays, how do we get the Eivishter's Chochmah, is through many tzimtzumim, which are compared to hairs. Law said, Lavi, we won't need that. We won't need the feathers, will have fallen out. We don't need the hairs. We can earn Hashem's Chochmei Law directly, and then you don't even need Av or Yira, which are represented by wings. That's represented by one of them lifting up its wing. So we'll continue tomorrow. Best Hashem, the Gemara is going to continue with more stories of Rabbi Baba Chana, with the next five of them being where an Arab guide is going to go, take him around to see different things, and we'll learn Best Hashem what all of those represent.